WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number two of the program here on a beautiful Wednesday morning. And again, she didn't say it, but I'm going to say it. That was ABC6 chief meteorologist Christina Schallhoop with your forecast. She just got promoted to that role yesterday. So congratulations to Christina. I'm going to send her a text and say, you better start saying chief meteorologist. The others never had any problem saying it. You've earned it. Say it. So tonight is game two of the Celtics and Magic playoff series in Boston. Jason Tatum listed as doubtful. So, I guess, you know, a bone bruise in the wrist is not something you should play through if it's causing you pain, because it's something that shouldn't take too long to heal if you give it the proper time to heal. But also, I don't think the Celtics need Jason Tatum to beat the Orlando Magic in a series. So rest up and make sure you're ready to go. Not that I want to look past anybody, but the Celtics have enough firepower and enough defensive prowess. They should be able to take care of it. And let their superstar rest up. So I had mentioned in the last hour that the city council tomorrow night will again be taking up the question of whether or not to move up the city's preliminary election. Now, they just went over this a couple of weeks ago. But now the mayor has resubmitted and said that Manny DiBrito, the chairman of the board of the election commission, the board of election commissioners. I don't know why I stumbled over that. So what it was after the council had turned down the original request. I hope that's lemonade, Gazelle. After the city council had turned down the request, Manny DiBrito sent a letter to, let me give you the exact role of this person, Michelle Tassinari, the first deputy secretary, director, and legal counsel for the elections division of the Office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth. So this is the person who knows what they need to know about whether or not this stuff has to happen, okay? And he sent this letter to her. I just have everything out of order. I'm just trying to get it all in the right order here, because these are they included the emails that were sent back and forth between them. So he mentioned to her that that the city council had previously voted down being able to move this back. Because he says, as discussed during our telephone conversation, the city of New Bedford holds its preliminary election the fourth Tuesday prior to the final election per the city charter and Mass General laws. This election season, that would mean a preliminary election date of October 7th. Given the time constraints due to mail-in voting, the recommendation and request was made to the city council to fix an earlier date of September 16th. Despite the recommendation, the city council voted down the advancement. We are planning to recommend to the city council that they reconsider their decision as soon as possible. And then he's asking her for some information regarding that many other cities and towns have done this, whatever she can provide on that. and also recommendations from the state regarding elections that would fall on religious holidays, because if they tried to put it on September 23rd, that falls on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish holiday. So she wrote back, and I'm going to read to you her response. I don't know that I'll read it verbatim, but she says, I agree with your recommendation to move, this is again, Michelle Tassinari, the first deputy secretary and director and legal counsel for the elections division of the Secretary of State's office of the Commonwealth. I agree with your recommendation to move the preliminary to an earlier date. As you know, the provisions of general laws, blah, 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 allow cities and towns to set the date of a preliminary regardless of what the city charter or the provisions may say. There are two compelling reasons to move a preliminary to an earlier date. First, under the provisions of Mass General Laws, the city is required to offer early voting by mail for the municipal election. If the preliminary is held only 4 weeks before the election, there would likely not be sufficient time to prepare ballots to mail to voters for the general election. After the preliminary, if there are no recounts filed, it would probably take at least a week to create, proofread, and approve the ballots to be printed before having them delivered to the city. This, again, this is coming from the Secretary of State's office. This is not Manny DiBrito saying this. This is the Secretary of State's office saying it. They're the ones that are going to create these ballots. Therefore, your office would need a few days to prepare the ballots and envelopes to be sent to the voters who requested them. Considering that standard mail delivery times have extended recently, it could take up to 5 business days for a voter to receive their ballot, which doesn't give much time for them to complete the ballot and mail it back to be received by the close of polls on election day. If a recount is petitioned for after the election, it would further delay the preparation of ballots and significantly decrease the time voters have to vote by mail. As such, moving the preliminary to an earlier date would allow more time to prepare the ballots for the voters to participate in the vote by mail process. Second, this year, because of the religious holiday, municipalities should avoid scheduling their preliminaries on September 23rd. Under the provisions of Chapter 451, if the secretary determines that holding a preliminary on a religious holiday would impair the rights of voters, the city or town would be required to change the date of the election. We've communicated this to municipalities whose charters provide for their preliminary elections to be held on September 23rd in the normal course. We further emphasize to them that even without the religious holiday, cities and towns should be looking to have their preliminary elections earlier, such as September 9th or 16th, to provide more time for vote by mail before the election. And then she also notes, it is important for the city to determine the date of the preliminary as quickly as possible, as the election calendar itself would be determined based on this date. Without the calendar available, you can't issue papers and candidates won't know the filing deadlines. We encourage the city to take action swiftly to move the preliminary to an earlier date. That is the recommendation from the Secretary of State's office, from the first deputy secretary and director and legal counsel of the Elections Division, Michelle Tassinari. So this isn't Manny DiBrito trying to move the election date. This isn't the mayor trying to move the preliminary election date. This isn't the whoever you feel the nefarious parties are that are trying to get more mail-in ballots, trying to move the date. This is the Secretary of State's office based on what is their recommended guidelines and requirements and timing to get these out. And as I said in the first hour, if you didn't tune in, if you're worried that there's something nefarious going on with these mail-in ballots, which there isn't, but if that's what you're concerned about, guess what? They don't care about an extra week or two. If they can start doing it based on the October date, they're going to do it based on the October date. If you really feel like people are trying to game the system somehow, they don't care if there's a couple of extra weeks, but you know who does care? The people who have to print these ballots. Now, again, as I mentioned, could all be a moot point. There might not be anybody that runs against the incumbent city councilors, and it doesn't really matter then, right? But what do you think the likelihood of that is? You don't think that people who have been considering a run in recent years aren't looking at some of the things that have been going on with the council and thinking this might be my chance? You don't think somebody in Ward 2 is thinking, wow, every day? And again, I don't know. I mean, I know some people are considering running. I don't know that they've actually said that they are. But if you look at what's going on in Ward 2, where Chris McCarthy every day is, you know, again, I don't agree with the nicknames. I think it's a little bit beneath him. But as he calls her, you know, Maria Siesta, asleep at the switch. So he's every day telling folks who live in Ward 2 that your city councilor isn't delivering for you. So you don't think that that might inspire somebody to say, well, I'm going to run against her then. We know that there have been issues with Councilor Morad and others on the council. You don't think that that might not make somebody say, you know what, I think I would run. So there's going to be people. There will be people who take out papers. And I'm sure some of them will actually go through the process to get on the ballot. Now, will there be enough to require a preliminary election? I don't know. My guess is yes. It only takes one person running for councilor at large, right? So we'll see how that shakes out. But this is just for the timing purposes. And they included in this, and you can, again, it's all in the agenda for Thursday night's meeting, which you can find on the city's website, on the city council page. But let me see here. It has a tentative municipal election calendar. So if this gets approved, this September 16th preliminary election date gets approved, this is how it would shake out. May 5th would be the first day in which you could obtain nomination papers for a city council, assessor at large, and school committee. There's no mayoral election on this year's municipal election. July 29th would be the last day, 5 p.m., the last hour to submit nomination papers for certification of signatures. August 12th, the last day and hour at 5 p.m., the last day and hour for filing certified nomination papers. On August 13th, they would post the list of candidates. On August 14th, it would be the last day to file withdrawals or objections to nomination papers. September 6th, this is a key day. You know, all that other stuff is, you know, minutia for those who aren't actually involved in running, but this is the date that matters to you. September 6th would be the last day to register to vote in the preliminary election. September 9th at 5 p.m. would be the last day and hour to apply for a mail-in or absentee preliminary ballot. September 15th would be the last day and hour to apply for an in-person absentee preliminary ballot. And then September 16th would be the preliminary election. Because then you would have until September 22nd to be the last day to file a recount petition if you feel like there needs to be a recount. October 25th, then the last day to register for the main municipal election, the general municipal election, I guess we'll call it. October 28th, last day and hour to apply for a mail-in or absentee ballot for that. November 3rd, last day and hour to apply for the in-person absentee ballot, and the election would happen on November 4th with November 14th being the last day to file for a recount. And that's how the calendar shakes out. That's why they're looking to move this back, to have that process all have the adequate amount of time. And again, the Secretary of State's office is saying that this is what should be done. And as mentioned, They're suggesting that September 9th would be a better date to do it than September 16th. Or I shouldn't say that, because as it says here, it says, we further emphasize that without the religious holiday of Rosh Hashanah, on September 23rd, cities and towns should be looking to have their preliminary elections earlier, such as September 9th or 16th. So they're saying you could have it as early as September 9th. To provide for more time for vote by mail before the election. And if you want, you can't come on the radio as a host, as a caller, as a city councilor, You can't come on the radio and say, we can't extend this, we can't move this date up to make it easier for mail-in voting. And then come on November 5th and bitch about the voter turnout. You can't have it both ways. If you want to see increased voter participation in New Bedford, they're not going to get up and go to the polls. They're not. They haven't done it for years. They haven't done it in a municipal election, really, at all. Without the mayor on there, we're talking, you know, this could be single-digit percentages of voter turnout. It could. Especially if there aren't viable candidates running against the councilors. And even if you do, like, you need somebody at the councilor at large position to draw out big numbers. Otherwise, you're just getting a pocket of voters in a ward. So if you want to see increased voter participation, you have to let the voters vote in the way that works for them, like early voting, like mail-in voting. That's how they're going to participate in municipal elections, because it doesn't involve them taking time out of their day for something that, I'm sorry, and I don't mean this, it's not my opinion, but probably in their opinion, it's just not important enough. It's not important enough in their mind to take time off of work or to leave work early or go in late or find a parking space and walk a couple of blocks or wait in line. Okay, they're not going to have to wait in line. But, you know, any of that is an inconvenience when you have legally the ability for them to just mail in their vote. And if you're that concerned about how somebody is going to try to manipulate a city election with mail-in ballots, I think that's either delusional or distracting, a distraction. Let's make it easier for people to vote, not harder. Then maybe we can get to 20% for a municipal election. You know how ecstatic I would be and Manny DiBrito would be and many others would be if you got a 20% turnout for a city council, assessor, and school committee election? So this is just simple math and numbers. This isn't any kind of plot. 508-996-0500. I've got to take a break. We'll be right back. And a quick reminder before we go into the news that tonight is the City Council's Committee on Public Safety and Neighborhoods meeting. It's happening at 7 p.m. in the City Council chamber at City Hall. It's located on the second floor. And Councilor Gomes he's the chair of the committee. He's requesting that downtown merchants, property owners, and business owners come in to discuss their concerns and ideas on improvements in the downtown and historical areas, and to use this discussion as an opportunity to work together on strategies that can be taken up to address the need for increased police presence, cleaning, and trash pickup, as well as other public safety issues in the area. So that meeting is happening tonight at 7 p.m. in the council chamber. It is the Committee on Public Safety and Neighborhoods, chaired by Councilor Gomes. And just a reminder for all of you who wanted to attend that, whether it be to have your voice heard or just to find out how the discussion goes. All right, it is time now to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Mike Roberts.
RFK planning on banning more food dyes. Student loan debt payments are starting to come back again, and a verdict in the Doomsday Mom case.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Health and Human Services Director Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announcing the ban of a number of artificial food dyes.
And we're going to get rid of the dyes, and one by one, we're going to get rid of every ingredient and additive to school in food that we can legally get addressed.
Eight petroleum-based synthetic dyes are on the list. In a move cheered by food activists, Kennedy made the announcement yesterday. He's previously said that he wants all artificial dyes phased out within the next 2 years. A jury has returned a verdict in the murder conspiracy trial of Lori Vallow Daybell.
We, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above entitled action, do find the defendant, Lori Daybell, guilty.
The so-called doomsday mom conspired to kill her fourth husband in 2019 with the help of her brother. Vallow Daybell was already convicted in Idaho in 2023 of murdering her two young children and conspiring to murder her husband, Chad Daybell's first wife. Her friends told prosecutors she embraces fringe apocalyptic beliefs. Tesla says its first quarter financial numbers missed expectations, with automotive revenue dropping 20%. It fell to $14 billion from nearly $17.5 billion at the same time last year. The automaker and energy company says the total revenue dropped 9%. Tesla points to updating assembly lines at the vehicle factories for the new Model Y as a reason for the decline. Tesla stock has tumbled 41% this year. President Trump says he has no intention of firing Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell.
No, I have no intention of firing him. I would like to see him be a little more active in terms of his idea to lower interest rates. This is a perfect time to lower interest rates.
Over the last week, Trump implied he could fire Powell if he wanted to, calling him, quote, a major loser, and saying he's not happy with him. While speaking to reporters in the White House, Trump said he never actually was going to fire him, but he'd like to see him take more steps to lower interest rates. Powell, a fellow Republican whose term ends in 2026, has previously said he would not step down if Trump asked him to, and that it's not permitted under the law for a president to fire or demote him. Gold prices continued their rally yesterday, touching a new record high after President Trump came out swinging against the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Gold prices continued to rise after President Trump called for an immediate reduction in interest rates, and he criticized the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell's stance to keep rates unchanged. This is something that has impacted investors' appetite for risk, driving money towards gold, which is considered to be a safe haven asset. President Trump's tariff policy and concerns about the impact that this could have on the global economy have been fueling gold's rally in recent weeks. Rebecca Bundin, Mumbai.
WBSM Sports.
It was the Red Sox over the Mariners, 8-3. Those two back together tonight at 6:45. Celtics game two with the Magic at the Garden at 7.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Clouds around, but temperatures pretty mild, largely in the upper 40s and low 50s. But speaking of mild, we are keeping up with the trend as we move into this Wednesday afternoon. Those stubborn clouds finally leave us, and we get plenty of sunshine here across the South Coast. Temperatures remaining relatively mild as well. Most of us between about 62 and 68 degrees, depending on where you live. Especially as we get a little further inland, you're going to see those temperatures go up with the sunshine this afternoon. Enjoy. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Christina Schallhoop. New Bedford's News Talk Station, 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get breaking news alerts and all of our content with the WBSM app.
And that Aerosmith Nine Lives album is such a great album. I don't know why people sleep on that one. That was also the tour that I first got to go see them on. What do they call it? It's the Nine Lives album, right? Did I say Nine Lives? I don't know what I said. But that's A Taste of India from the Nine Lives album. But yeah, that was... And Nine Lives is a great song. I just can't play a bunch of screeching cats at 7:37 in the morning. It's a little too early for that. Plus, there was a hidden message behind that song for somebody who's stuck on a call with India. So... Again, 508-996-0500 if you want to chime in on this New Bedford preliminary election date or whatever else is on your mind. I did have a story yesterday at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. I had so much going on yesterday. I had to leave for a dentist appointment. I went for a cleaning. And I had a new dentist. So I've been going to the same dentist for a long time now. Probably at least 5 years. And he is great. I go in for the cleaning. He comes in, goes over, takes a look at my teeth and all that kind of stuff. And I've had a few things done, some old fillings that had to get replaced. You know, the old metal fillings from when I was a kid turned into the new plastic ones. And, thankfully I haven't had any actual cavities as an adult, but you got to do some of the work on the old ones that were filled. So he's always great. But so this was a new dentist. I didn't ask what happened to my previous dentist. I didn't ask if he retired or anything. Maybe he just needs to bring an extra pair of hands. I don't know. But anyway, this guy was good too. He just popped in, looked over my teeth, said everything looked good. And then said, you do have that underbite though. And do you happen to have any sleep apnea issues? I was like, well, actually, yeah, I've had sleep apnea for a long time. And he said, yeah, that's probably a big part of it. I was like, well, I thought it was because of my weight and I lost 100 pounds and I didn't go down at all. And in my titration and everything, he goes, yeah, it's probably the overbite. I was like, the underbite. I was like, why didn't anybody tell me that before? And he said, well, we can fix it, but it's going to involve surgery. And I was like, well, never mind. I'm good. I don't need to have my mouth orally repaired. I said, I need my mouth. I use it every day. So I think I'll just keep wearing the mask. Although I have a sleep study scheduled for November where I might not have to wear the mask anymore. Depends on how that turns out. Thank you, weight loss. Thank you, India. Thank you, frailty. Thank you, disillusionment. Anyway, Atlantis fans get that. But anyway, so I had a busy day yesterday. So I had a couple of fun things I was working on, a couple of fun articles. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to just work on these ones today rather than anything heavy and serious because I've been running around doing so much stuff. I'm just going to put these fun articles out today. And one of them is there's a Facebook page that I follow. I was trying to think of the word. Facebook page, account, whatever, that I follow called Greasy News. And it's not really news as much as it is nostalgia, like old restaurant nostalgia. They post up like the Ponderosa menu or the York Steakhouse menu, or they'll put up some old commercial from, Sambo's restaurant. There's no place like Sam's. Like, they'll put up stuff like that. Like, and it's fun. It's memory lane. It's that kind of stuff. I like going down the nostalgia path. And the other day they posted up a 1996 menu from Subway. And I remember in the 90s when I first had Subway, I was all about it. Now, I barely ever eat Subway, and there's one right here. I used to eat a lot of Subway when it was next door. I got dinner from there way too often when I was working nights doing news, or doing the second shift of news. So I probably have had, my fill of Subway for my life, but every once in a while I still might get something from there. But back in the 90s, man, first of all, as they say, you know, Subway hit different. But also, it was new and it was exciting because it was a new chain. When I didn't get a lot of new chains when I was a kid. I don't remember new things popping up. You know, we had Wendy's, we had Burger King, we had McDonald's. I remember when we first went to Taco Bell. I was like, well, this is great. Tacos now, we can get tacos. You know, I think one of the few things I remember discovering was Popeyes. They opened a Popeyes in Brockton. But it wasn't really we used to go there because on Saturdays, my sisters went to dancing school in Brockton. And so my dad would bring them to class, my three sisters. Well, my brother and him and I all stayed out in the van waiting for them to be done. And my dad would take a nap in the front seat of the van while me and my brother were in the back of the van. And he would put the radio on. Channel 6 used to come over the radio and we'd listen to like Pee Wee's Playhouse and Garfield and things like that. But anyway, then I got a little battery-powered TV, brought that with me. But WBCN used to do this thing where they would do these, they do remotes from there, and you show up and you could get like two pieces of chicken and a biscuit for a buck. Or maybe it was even free, but whatever. So we go down there and get lunch. But anyway, we didn't get a lot of new places. So when Subway rolled in, it took me a while to try it. I remember my uncle bringing me there for the first time when we were on our way to go do something. And he's like, you haven't had Subway? You got to try Subway. And so I was blown away by the fact that I could get a wheat roll. We weren't a wheat bread household. We didn't eat wheat bread. So to me, that was like exotic and different. And I got tuna on a wheat. And it's when they used to cut that V out of the bread. And then they would put the tuna and whatever else you wanted in there. And you could get as much of the lettuce and tomato and all that stuff. And then they put the little triangle of bread back on there if you wanted. So just taking a look at that menu brought back those days, but it also brought up something I had totally forgot about. Do you remember the little round sandwiches that they used to have at Subway? It was like a bulky roll, but it was made from the same bread that they were baking in the store. And I think what it probably was like the little pieces of dough that were left over. They just kind of roll those into those little sandwiches. And it was 4 inches. They'd put a pretty good amount of meat on it and whatever vegetables you wanted. And they were like $2. Not that we want to invoke the name of Jared Fogle, but you could eat lunch every day for $10 for the entire work week. Just to give you an example, I was paying $2.10 for a lunch in high school. So, you know, you can't find a $2 lunch in the adult world. So that was a really good deal. And I totally forgot about those sandwiches until I read that menu. Also, apparently, this is from a Subway in Connecticut. It had seafood and lobster as a sandwich option. You could get a foot-long sandwich that was seafood and lobster, which they had another one that was seafood and crab. So I'm like, what? Normally seafood salad is crab, imitation crab, but still, what was in the seafood part if they had seafood and crab and then seafood and lobster? But anyway, you could get seafood and lobster for five. It was like just under $6. I think it was like $5.50 or $5.75. I don't think we had that locally. But I still remember when lobster sandwiches went on sale at D'Angelo for the first time. And once a summer, my ex-wife and I would get a foot-long lobster sandwich each. And then, you know, you'd have to cut it in half because you can't eat that much in one go. But we'd have a couple of days of these lobster sandwiches. And we thought, you know, we were splurging because they were $19 each. Now you go and get a lobster roll and a hot dog bun. It's $38. 508-996-0500. You can read that article at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. Take a look at that menu and remember some of your old Subway favorites. I remember when it was right next door to here. I'm so old. I remember when that was not a Subway and it was a TCBY. And then that went out of business. And I believe that's when Subway moved in. And then we later had another yogurt place in the plaza where the sushi place is now. Was it 168 Kitchen? That was Cool Moose Cafe. And oh man, did I love Cool Moose Cafe. You could go in there and they would let you sample as much of the different flavors as you wanted before you made your decision. So you could try every flavor before you decided which one you were going to buy. And then they had all these toppings you could put on it, whatever you wanted. And then you just paid by the weight. And I used to go over there all the time before Spooky South Coast and get myself a Froyo, come over here and enjoy that while I was waiting for the show to start. Man, probably lucky we don't have that anymore. But yeah, check out the story at WBSM.com and on the app and share some of your Subway memories under the story on Facebook. All right, let me take this break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Touched me and I feel like something's gonna give. And I'm a little bit angry. Oh, well, this ain't over. No, not here.
There's another band I used to mock and not like, and then they grew on me. I used to call Rob Thomas Captain Intensity because I was like, this guy, he just tries too hard. But then you see him like in interviews and stuff. He's kind of a goofy guy. That was the great thing about 90s music, where the goofy guys could be rock stars. 508-996-0500, app chat and open line voicemails on the WBSM app. It's such a beautiful day out there. You might be thinking today's a good day to grill up some dinner. Well, why not stop by the butcher shop and pick up something really good? Pick up something that's exactly the way you want it. Whether you want a nice fatty piece of steak or you want something that's on the lean side, you want to cut really thick, or maybe you're looking to get, you know, a thin slices so it cooks up a little faster. Whatever it is that you like, the butcher shop will make it exactly the way you want it. It's not a supermarket where you walk in and the meat's already cut and wrapped and you have to buy what they think a cut of meat is. No, you go in there and you talk with Eric, you talk with Joe, you tell them exactly how you want it and that's what they give you. And if they don't have something in there, you ask them, they'll probably be able to get it for you. If they can, they will. It's that dedication to service. It's that dedication to the customer that makes me say again and again, they are a true old school neighborhood market. Check out the butcher shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford, and you will find something delicious, I promise. And this portion of the program is brought to you by the butcher shop. We've got our first cash code of the day coming up in the next hour. We're going to be giving away $1,000. You will hear that code coming up in the 8 o'clock hour and then one every hour throughout the day. 10 chances every day to enter to win $1,000. And then tomorrow, it is our first $10,000 Thursday. What could you do with $10,000? I'm sure you've got some ideas, especially with the summer on the horizon. You know what $10,000 could buy you? I'm going to be honest with you. I would probably spend that 10 grand either on another motorcycle. I haven't had mine for a couple of years now. So I'd either get another bike. I don't know where I'd keep it, but I'd get one. Or I'd finally pull the trigger and get myself another Trans Am. That's what I would do with $10,000. You could probably find something a little bit more responsible to do with it. And thankfully, I'm not eligible to win it. So, you know, you don't have to worry about me showing up in a Trans Am anytime soon, although maybe. But you can do whatever you want with it. And we'll have your first code to try to win $1,000 today coming up. And then tomorrow, our first $10,000 Thursday. And Money Talks on WBSM is brought to you by Long Moving and Storage. Maybe you're going to use that $10,000 to put a down payment on a house. Maybe that you've been saving up and that will just put you over the top. And then you'll need Long Moving and Storage to help you out, right? All right, I've got to take one final break this hour. Let me get that done. We'll come back, wrap up the hour in just a few. And that is the pride of Westport High School, class of 1983. In fact, he was voted, what was the title they gave him? And it was like most outstanding teen or something like that. Charles Thompson IV, or as you might know him, Black Francis, a.k.a. Frank Black. The leader of the Pixies. But yes, Westport High School 1983 graduate. You can read about it at WBSM.com. Just Google Black Francis WBSM. You'll find the whole story with his yearbook photo and everything. So yes, you might not have known that the leader of the Pixies spent some time on the South Coast. I think he lived here for about a year or so. But he graduated from Westport High School, which is pretty cool, I think. Also from Westport, Matt Taibbi, the reporter who worked for Rolling Stone for a number of years, who's now an independent journalist. He was doing stuff on X. I stopped following him when he started kissing Elon's butt just a little bit too much in my mind. But I was always a fan of his writing. So yeah, Westport's turned out some folks in the rock and roll world, that's for sure. Although Matt Taibbi was writing about, you know, news, not music for Rolling Stone. That was one of the things I always wanted to do. I wanted to write for Rolling Stone, but the couple of times I tried to reach out and send submissions, never heard back. I always wanted to be published either in Rolling Stone or Mad Magazine. And now Mad doesn't even exist anymore. And Rolling Stone